This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. I'm Mark Haney. Gaia Vince is the former editor at Nature magazine who decided to leave her office and travel the world to see how people on the front line of our changing environment are living. She found some extraordinary people and stories and has compiled them in her book, Adventures in the Anthropocene, A Journey to the Heart of the Planet We Made. Thane Maynard with the Cincinnati Zoo spoke with Gaia Vince about her journey.
Gaia Vince, thanks for taking a few minutes on our show.
Hello, hello. Good to talk to you.
Well, I have lots of questions, of course. Your book, Adventures in the Anthropocene, is daunting, that's for sure. Very thoroughly researched. And yet, don't we live in a challenging time? Maybe first explain what the Anthropocene is.
Well, so the Anthropocene, it's a geological term. So it's a bit like talking about the Jurassic or the Cretaceous or the Cambrian, periods of time that came before when we know of them because of the dominant species perhaps was a dinosaur or when there was a great explosion of life. And now scientists are saying we are living in such an incredible time as well. We're living in a changed planet and humans are the dominant force. So Anthropocene literally means age of humans, and we are now the planet-shaping force, just like asteroids were in the past, or just like a supervolcanic eruption.
Well, and certainly your book discusses many things and the changes that people have in living in these times, but a lot of it does center around the changes that climate change are creating, and I know you're an expert on that. So tell a bit about what the book really covers.
The book talks about climate change. It talks about all the changes that humans are having on the planet. These are planet-wide global changes. So we have changed river systems. We've changed the oceans. We've changed wildlands. We've raised forests to the ground and put artificial landscapes for our agriculture. 40% of the world's planet's land, ice-free land now, is used for our food. We have created entirely artificial environments called cities. Everywhere you look, we've changed the planet. There is no part of the planet now that is untouched by humankind. It's an incredible time. It really is. So climate change is because we've moved essentially from the Holocene, a period of time where climate was relatively stable because we are pumping carbon dioxide into the atmosphere, which traps heat and causes a warmer, wetter climate, warmer, wetter atmosphere. And so climate is no longer stable. We have more extreme conditions, but it's also warmer, which means glaciers are melting, which means we have drought in some place, floods in other places. And a lot of this heat is being captured by the oceans. So the oceans are warming. They're becoming more expansive. So sea level is rising. The ocean's also becoming more acidic because when carbon dioxide is dissolved in the oceans, it causes a little bit of carbonic acid, which dissolves things like coral and the small shell creatures that are very, very valuable because great creatures like the blue whale feed on them. So we're having these enormous effects. If you look at rainforests, we're completely changing those. Drought is causing forests to die. We're overhunting certain species, we're logging, we're mining in these environments. So really we're having this dramatic human effect all around our planet, and that's really what the Anthropocene is about.
And as if all that isn't bad enough, I read recently that the mosquitoes are even worse up in the Arctic Circle now because their breeding season's about 2 weeks longer than it was just a decade ago. So nobody wants more mosquitoes.
Definitely not. So I mean, mosquitoes are a massive pest, but they also, of course, bring disease. And we're finding human and animal tick-borne diseases and mosquito-borne diseases. All sorts of things are now moving out of the geographical range that we expect to find them. And some of this is because of global warming and climate change, and some of it is because we are changing habitats. We're encroaching on former wildland, on marshlands or on forested areas. We're interacting more with bushmeat, that sort of thing. So many of our diseases actually came out of wild animals. Ebola is of course known, but and HIV. But what about things like human flus. They all come from animals as well. So we're really blurring the lines that we so carefully have drawn up in the last millennia, where we try to separate ourselves from nature. We've tried to compartmentalize it. We now have to realize that we are of nature. Everything we use, everything we eat, everything we use to build our houses, to clothe us, as building materials, to clean our water, to clean our air, to provide oxygen, everything comes from the natural world. Without it, you know, what are we going to do? Mine the moon? I don't think so. So we have to really look at our relationship with the rest of the planet and realize that we're inextricably linked. We're intertwined with it. So we have to make fundamental changes as society and work out what do we want our relationship to be? How are we going to plan this, and how are we going to live as a human species that is so dependent on the natural world at a time when our population has never been higher? We're approaching 10 billion now. We're already over 7 billion, and we could even go up to 11. Our population is much higher. The climate is less stable. We've used already most of the arable land that are available to grow our food, and we need to produce a lot more. So where are we going to do that? Resources are limited, natural resources, mineral resources. We've got some really big questions to answer.
The good news is, of course, people are good problem solvers, and we're very tenacious. The bad news, of course, is we're not very good at thinking a long way ahead. Maybe it's human nature, I don't know, but we tend to get what we can get while we can. So what do you think the future looks like 100 years from today?
Well, in the book, I had a little play with that idea to have a look. But I can't predict. I don't think anyone can predict, because we don't know what the future holds. What we do know is we can look at certain trends. We can look at the way we're going with our relationship to animals. For example, it looks like we're heading now for the sixth mass extinction that the planet's ever known. You know, will we have elephants in 30 years' time in the wild? I don't know. Perhaps not at the rate we're killing them at the moment. Will we have pollinators? Will we have honeybees that help us provide our food? Well, that's a really worrying question. So we can project certain things ahead, but what we can't quite understand is how we can solve these problems, where our ingenuity will take us. And it's difficult to predict. It's difficult to make changes based on long-term outcomes. And one of the reasons for that is our very human nature. We're not a forward-looking animal. We really aren't. I mean, how many of us have really good pensions? You know, we struggle to plan ahead, to make conscious, sensible choices about things. So it's a really difficult situation that we're in, and it's a very unnatural thing for us to have to do, to plan ahead, especially if it's not always the easiest option. And most of the decisions we have to make are not easy. It's not easy to choose a more complicated way of creating energy. It's not easy to choose to eat less meat when our bodies might naturally be accustomed to eating meat. And yet a lot of us have chosen voluntarily to become vegetarian. It's not easy to limit our childbearing when naturally, as all species, we're biologically designed, I guess, to have as many children as we want. And yet we are. Globally, we're limiting our children to perhaps two children, you know. So we're perfectly capable. It's just hard to behave unnaturally. And perhaps we will be the only species that self-aware and also capable of self-determination and can escape some of the destruction that we're bringing upon ourselves.
Now, Gaia, you are originally from Australia and you live in London and have obviously researched all over the world. Perhaps you can make sense of this, but you probably have heard in the United States, who knows why, but there ends up being great big political debate about things such as climate change. And a lot of energy and effort and time is wasted with that debate. Do you see that same sort of thing, whether that's in Europe, Australia or others?
What, the debate about whether or not climate change exists?
Right. There's more. I think there's more
about what to do about it.
Right. I sense in the United States, when you watch or listen to the news, there's more time and energy spent arguing about it than there is saying, what could we do about it?
It's very strange. This is something that's not doesn't really happen in Europe. It happens to some extent recently in Australia, but I find the American situation quite bizarre, I have to say. you know, it's that the world is warming is pretty undisputed. I mean, we have temperature evidence showing that it's warming, and it's a pretty simple physical explanation for why. Much more interesting is the debate about what on earth we're going to do about it, because that is a debate that's really worth having and should have been happening for some time. And that's something that the scientists can't answer. They can, you know, we've got science, but that's something for society to answer. We have to decide what steps to take. You know, we're either going to have to adapt to the warmer conditions. Well, we're going to have to adapt to warmer conditions because even if we were to stop emitting carbon dioxide right now, we're already locked in to a certain degree of global warming. What are we going to do? The alternatives are to try and cool the planet, and that's a fairly unpalatable solution as well, because it's risky. We don't know how to do it. We don't know what the repercussions might be. And these are the sorts of debates and questions that we should be asking, not questioning the science, because I mean that's been understood since the 1700s. So, yeah.
Sure. And well, as you said, all the things that we use and that support us come from nature. So clearly we need the task to be to learn to live within our means, just like we do in our daily lives. So before you go, naturally, I have to ask, tell us about your name, Gaia Vince. Your parents named you Gaia?
Yes.
Yeah,
nominative determinism. Well, actually, it's because my father at the time was studying ancient Greek, and Gaia is the goddess of the earth. And that's the reason for that. So
that's great. Well, it is a perfect name. That's right. It's a perfect name for the work you're doing. I appreciate what you're doing. Your book is great. As you said in your final chapter, you toy with the concept of what will life be like in London and around the world in the year 2100. And it's a great and important book. So, Gaia, thank you very much.
Thanks very much.
All right. Take care. Bye-bye. My guest has been Gaia Vince, author of the new book, Adventures in the Anthropocene. For Cincinnati Edition, I'm Thane Maynard.